Committee to order. Senator Sparks, Senate File 3217.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 3217 in front of you today. This is dealing with the City of Austin's Tax Increment Financing District authorization use. We do have a handout that I think is being distributed right now, Mr. Chair and members. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Jim Herm, who's the Austin City Administrator and also the Director of the Austin Housing and Redevelopment Authority, to talk about our proposal that's in front of you today.
Mr. Herm, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chairman Bach and members of the Senate Tax Committee. Before you this morning, we have a joint resolution, and if you have your handout, it is the third page in. It's the first Exhibit A. It is a joint resolution by the Austin City Council and the Housing and Redevelopment Authority, or our HRA, requesting this special legislation, which is Senate File 3217. This legislation will allow tax increment funds from Austin's TIF District No. 9 to reimburse the Austin HRA about $140,000 of its own funds spent on mitigation of contaminated soils and debris as required by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, MPCA. Given the redevelopment that has taken place on this property, it would likely take three years, possibly 4 years, to pay back through the tax increment that's generated. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this project was initiated to revitalize an old railroad yard in the city of Austin. And if you will please refer to Exhibit B, it's an aerial photograph, and right at the term Exhibit B there, you can see a darkened area. That's the area that we're talking about. It's an aerial photograph during the initial environmental cleanup stages from its original land use as the railroad site. Austin's HRA partnered with MPCA and Minnesota's Department of Employment and Economic Development to clean up the site. Deed funds were used to assist with removal of contaminated soils from this railroad yard site to make the property available for redevelopment. The bulk of the work was completed, and most of the funds were spent in 2002 and 2003. Then in September of 2004, Austin suffered a record-setting flood, and floods do take more than lives and property at that time. It affects other things, and it put that project back. It spurred the city to obtain funds to buy out several businesses subject to repetitive funding. The railroad yard property provided an ideal location site for these businesses. Funds for the flood buyout were approved in April of 2005. Construction of approximately 9-acre site took place in 2006. Quantity of topsoil material was stockpiled for the redevelopment or during the redevelopment process. The City of Austin requested a grant extension from DEED to assist with the stockpile soil, which was suspected of contaminating additional environmental contaminants. The request was denied, and the grant was closed in March of 2007. Now, we're not at all critical of DEED. This project did take longer than it should have, largely, again, because of the flood. At this time, roughly $106,000 remaining in the grant was, in fact, returned to DEED. Testing was conducted on the stockpile soil, and it proved to be slightly above allowable limits. Some of the dirt had been taken off to other sites, and I believe it was a citizen complaint who brought it to MPCA's attention. They tested those sites. That was fine. But some of this, the dirt that was still remaining on this site did have slight contaminants. The City of Austin's Engineering Department worked with the MPCA to use the materials to fill an area that had been used for stormwater retention and to establish a new stormwater retention area for the development. The cost of this project was $139,788, and it was borne entirely by the Austin's HRA, decimating our general fund. That is basically what our general fund levy is, our HRA's general fund levy for an entire year. This redevelopment was established as an economic development TIF district in the year 1999. The use of these tax increment funds for such purposes was the original intent of Austin's TIF district. However, because the funds were not spent within the first 5 years of the district's life, special legislation is required at this time to allow its use. It is, finally, it is worth noting, Mr. Chair, that with this plan, no state funds are being used. And in fact, as I mentioned, funds were returned to the state in 2007. On behalf of the Austin Mayor and City Council and its HRA, I ask that you take affirmative action on the special legislation which would reimburse Austin's HRA for those funds spent on this project from tax increment funds that were originally intended for this purpose. Exhibit C, then, the final picture, shows how the successfully developed project area looks today. It's not the entire project area, but it's the area in question. I thank you and offer to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Herm. Any questions from the committee members? Mr. Herm, so I understand this is the kind of work that originally was contemplated.
That is correct.
And we're just working outside of the five-year window when it normally would have been reimbursable.
That's correct. Exactly. And again, they are excused for being over. And Austin does have a good record. I think the state agencies enjoy working with the city of Austin. We get in, we get the work done and get it down. But in this case, largely because of the flood, the project was put back. And so we're asking for you to allow us to keep the TIF district open, be able to use these funds for it for about 3 more years.
Committee members, anything? Senator Sparks, anything further?
No, Mr. Chair.
Chair lays over Senate File 3217 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you,
Thank you,
Sparks,
Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you very much.
It's pretty easy. Senator Sharon, in the room? Senator Lotz. I know Senator Sharon's in the building because I saw her earlier this morning. Well, members, maybe we'll move on to the House file that the House passed yesterday, House File 3201, and sent over. And this is a bill that we actually went through last week and prepared for what? The House made a couple of changes in the provisions that we actually went through last week. So I think we'll have counsel take and go through what the House changes were to the bill.
excuse me, Mr. Chairman, members, in Article 1, Section 1, and these are all amendments, I should backtrack a little bit and say that the bill that we ran through last week was summarized up through all the changes in the House committees. excuse me, but on the floor there were a handful of amendments, and the first is in Article 1, Section 1, and these were changes in the local government aid base for cities. In the bill that was before you last week, there was an adjustment for the city of Manoman. On the House floor, additional adjustments were made for Taylor's Falls. That was $30,000 permanently. Browns Valley, which was $100,000 permanently. And then temporary adjustments, one to Newport, which was $75,000 per year from 2009 to 2014, Crookston at $200,000 from 2009 to 2013, and Rockville, which was $30,000 in 2009 only. Oh, in the property tax article, the change would be, that's Article 2. If you look at page 3 of the summary, there was an amendment that affected the class rate for the first tier of Class 1C resort property, that's the homestead resorts, and that reduced the class rate from 0.55% of market value to 0.5% of market value. Under current law, that applies to the first $500,000. This was extended to the first $600,000. So there was a reduction in the class rate on a portion of the first tier of market value for these homestead resorts. And then there were some in the income tax and federal update article, there were just some movements of sections. One section was moved from the income tax article to the federal update article to be more consistent. And I think that was it in the income tax. And Mr. Chairman, members, that's the substance of the changes that were adopted by the House on the floor.
And Council, do we have an oral amendment taking a?
Mr. Chairman, I would add that to the to your author's amendment.
Okay. We've got a couple of author's amendment. There was the A1 amendment. Senator Skoy moves the A1 amendment. Has that been distributed?
Yes.
Members, what the A1 does, it's a little piece that inadvertently got left out between Representative Lencheski and myself. In last year's bill, if property classified as timberland had a 1% class rate, and last year we made a decision that if it was enrolled in a forest management plan under the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act, we lowered that class rate to 0.65. Now, if they hadn't put, but they only get that if they have not actually put the covenants. They put the covenants on, but haven't actually enrolled it for the payment back from the state. If they enrollment for the incentive program, then they wouldn't get the 0.65. But if they've done a management plan, have put the covenants on, agreed to management for timber, but don't receive the state stipend per acre, they'd get a lower class rate in lieu of that. So this is just something that was inadvertently left out of this year's draft, but it was in last year's bill. It's been well vetted, so. And council has an oral amendment to with it. Go ahead.
Grab this one. Mr. Chairman, members, the amendment has a number of other provisions as well. One was beginning on page 1, line 2 and 3. This amendment would delete the additional changes to the local government aid, city aid base changes that relate to Crookston and
Browns Valley.
Thank you.
And the reason they're members is we in the flood bill in the special session we did give an additional appropriation to both Browns Valley and to Crookston. We'd been carrying it in last year's tax bill, but they were given additional appropriation for this current biennium in the flood bill, so that the House, I think, inadvertently kind of gave them the opportunity to double dip with the flood stuff and with the stuff we had in last year's bill. So that's all that does. Okay.
And then also on the first page there, the amendment on line 1.4, it deletes the section 13 that was in the bill as it came from the House, and that was the provision that affected the changes in the utility class rates. So when the forest provision that Senator Bach referred to was inserted, at the same time the section dealing with the utility class rates was deleted. And to that I would add to this amendment that on page 13 we should delete section 3. That was a provision that was in the bill that authorized the utilities to go forward with rate adjustments because of the rate changes. So that should come out together with the rate changes that were in the bill.
So let's take care of that oral amendment now. So Senator Skoy incorporates on page 13, delete section 3. That's incorporated into the amendment.
And then the remainder of the amendment begins on page 4 at the back of your amendment. Everything else on pages 2 and 3 deals with the forestry provision. The deletions of sections 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 deal with the local sales taxes for Cook County and Proctor, and also the moratorium on the local on the enactment of new local sales taxes, the promotion of new local sales taxes. The provisions on lines 8 through 10 deal with some changes in the Bemidji sales tax to clarify the intent that they would be able to expend up to $44 million. The city share would be able to be up to $44 million. Sections, the deletions of section 11, 12, and 13 are the deletions of the Clearwater, North Mankato, and Winona sales taxes. On line 14 of page 4, the deletions of sections 5 to 14 are the county deed and mortgage taxes and the environmental cleanup funds that those were intended to fund. Those have all been removed from the bill, both the new ones and the continuation of those that had been enacted but had terminated. Let's see. On page, the amendment to page 93, beginning on line 15 of the amendment, deals with the membership of the Iron Range Higher Education Committee. The bill had originally removed the commissioner of IRRRB from that committee, and this amendment would reinstate the commissioner. On page 147, this is an amendment to a provision dealing with Crane Lake that was in the public finance bill. The bill had originally authorized Crane Lake to issue certificates of indebtedness up to $225,000, and this would change that to $250,000.
Commissioner, maybe you could come up to the table and tell us why we're deleting so many things out of the bill here.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ines, representing the Department of Revenue. And we are deleting a few things, but we're not deleting everything that we want to delete it. So let's put that on the record. But we think this represents a reasonable compromise. We raised some issues about the utility classification issue. We raised some issues about the number of local option sales taxes that were in the bill, the D taxes. I think the chairman and I met yesterday, and we thought we struck a reasonable balance between what was in the bill that and some of these more objectionable provisions. And I think with this amendment, this author's amendment, would secure the support of the governor.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Squay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. So the governor doesn't support the utility tax rate change. What does the governor propose to do to these communities that are going to have this huge property tax shift onto their homeowners?
Chairman, Senator Scoey, he doesn't support the class rate changes that appeared in this bill. Let's put it that way. There will be something in supplemental budget that's been confirmed to me to address this issue. It's not a class rate approach. It's more of a transitional aid approach. But he is very cognizant that this is an issue for those host communities. And I'm sure there will be further discussions down the road in the future tax bill that's going to come down the pike here in the next few weeks. But the approach that was in this bill, we thought this wasn't the appropriate vehicle at the appropriate time. And maybe the appropriate solution.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, Commissioner Ines, hopefully the governor would look beyond the two or three host communities that he addressed in last year's supplemental bill and take a little bigger view of the impacts on these communities that are across the state. And so I'll look forward to seeing what the governor is proposing to do.
Questions, members? Commissioner, the environmental deed taxes, two of them have been in place for 10 years, had a sunset. Would you explain to me the rationale that the governor insisted they come out of the bill?
I mean, Chairman, I think the primary rationale was that this is just the wrong time to impose deed taxes. The economy has changed since last year. The housing market has taken a substantial deterioration. And to impose those taxes, what is a regressive tax on the ability to purchase a home, we think this is the wrong time and place for that. Until we can revisit this issue down the road, but at this point, we just think that was an appropriate time to impose those taxes.
And Commissioner, Senator Sharon came to me this morning, and she is advocating very hard for her local sales tax provision for North Mankato. They've already passed a referendum. We discussed this, and she felt very strongly that she'd like to keep that North Mankato sales tax in the bill, but the governor's rationale, I thought the governor's position was if local taxes are approved locally, that he would be willing to support them. Why did we take North Mankato and Clearwater and Winona out of the bill?
Chairman, you're correct. In the past, we've basically taken no position on local option sales taxes. The only condition we really had is that they would go to a referendum. I do think time has changed. I think primarily this was supposed to be a non-controversial, fast-track, I would call benign tax bill. And when it got loaded up with a bunch of local option sales tax, I think that it probably did not meet that litmus test any longer. Also, I think this session has had its share of tax increases already, and the governor is a little bit at tax fatigue at this point. So I think he wanted to be more selective than he had been in the past about what he would support and what he would not support. And I think you made a very compelling case for Bemidji that there's a unique set of facts surrounding that particular local option sales tax and that it warranted going forward.
Members of the committee, any questions of the commissioner? On the A1 amendment, members. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A1 is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I'm going to have a let me talk about the problem, and I'll see if we can find a solution. In the Section 4, Article 1, there's a provision in here that would have these payments to the city of Manoman be reduced by the amount of any property payments in lieu that they receive. The problem is that we've already calculated that into the overall number that we are appropriating for the county and the city of Manoman. So if this provision stays in the bill, the city will be reduced twice. Now, I contacted my House member, and we talked to House staff on Thursday or Friday as this was moving in the House, and the word came back to me that they had resolved this issue, but I see that the language is exactly the same as it was before, and they haven't addressed it at all. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is going to mess up your agreement with the House, but I would like to remove the paragraph B there, little b. And, well, no, and it causes a problem for the city of Manoman in that they'll be subtracted twice for the same payment in lieu if we leave it in.
Well, I certainly don't think that's our intent.
No,
from that way.
From our discussions, we've never intended to do that. We were going to subtract it once. We did subtract their payment out of the larger appropriation, and then reduced what they were going to get by that amount. That's why those are just set amounts. That was done in the discussions that we had in conference committee last year. And I see this language is here, and I don't. I did talk to my House members, and I thought they had it resolved, but from my point, they don't. So I think we should remove that if it doesn't mess up the whole bill with the House.
Senator Skoy moves to delete in Article 1, Section 4, delete lines 10.13, 10.14, and 10.15, and renumber.
What was that, Mr. Chair?
Your motion, Senator Skoy, is to delete lines 10.13, 10.14, and 10.15?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And what I would like to do is, could I take that out now and then go back and work with the House and see what why this is still the same, and
sure.
and then we'll continue this discussion. But I, from my point, I brought it to their attention, and it's still the same. I'd like it removed.
And then we take the A out on line 10.14 and then renumber.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
On the SCOI oral motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. So, Senator SCOI, if you can find out if we need to put something back there on the floor.
Yep. I will check on that, Mr. Chair.
Not that I'm encouraging floor amendments, but if we have to do something to kind of clean up something that's existing in the bill, I think that's...
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought I had addressed this last week. The message came back to me that they had taken care of it, and I'm looking at it now. It's exactly the same as it was before, so I think we'll need to work on it. But I think this would be a good change to make at this time. And
well,
thank
I don't, yeah, Senator Scott, I don't think the House had it all right. I mean, they did have the Browns Valley and the Crookston thing that were dealt with in the flood relief bill also in here, so I think this may have just been one of the other provisions they overlooked.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. I have the A3 amendment. Mr. Chair, explain the amendment as it comes around. What this seeks to do is, as you recall, we had the discussion last year, and it's in the bill, allowing City of Minneapolis to designate 400 parcels for housing replacement TIF districts. This allows them to use a little bit of that increment that's created to use for the activities that relate to managing a lot of the boarded and vacant properties that are springing up as a result of the foreclosure crisis. I believe that's what inclusion under Section 45, Subdivision 1, et cetera, refers to on line 14. And as you're probably aware, it's quite a task to manage these boarded and vacant properties once they become abandoned, and the City of Minneapolis is having some serious budget impact, and so that's the goal of this amendment. Bonnie Balich from Minnesota Solutions is here to help explain if there's any further explanation needed.
Senator Dibble, do we have any idea how the House feels about this?
No, but Bonnie Balich may be able to help us with that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bonnie Balich, and I'm here on behalf of the City of Minneapolis. And this particular change has not received approval from Representative Lenchusky. Neither has she issued disapproval. We haven't approached her yet.
Has she even seen it?
It was sent to Joel, and I also sent her an email, but I have not approached her directly on it. I had intended to do that, and things moved a little quickly.
Senator Dibble, I don't think I have any objection, and I wonder if it couldn't wait for, I mean, basically 4 weeks from today, we're going to be passing another omnibus bill out of here. I'm a little uncomfortable. I mean, Representative Lenchusky and I have spent a great deal of time on what's in here, and if everything we've done, we've both agreed to, and it's something I'd rather consider towards the end of the month. If we can.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll withdraw the amendment.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Senator Bowen. And Ms. Balich, you think we can get it drafted into a bill so that we can have some discussion about it?
Mr. Chair, yes, it has been drafted in a bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I thought it was going to be handled on the House side, so I'm surprised there's been no discussion over there. So it's appropriate to withdraw it.
I appreciate that. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment to page 90. Like to delete section 15 of article 7. And this is the petrol fund exemption that's not in effect right now. It was for, I think it was 1993. I don't remember what conference committee I was on, but I remember about sometime one evening one of the House members came in with an amendment that had not been heard in either committee. I don't think there was a bill or anything else like it. And they said, well, because Northwest was struggling with bankruptcy risk, in order to avoid filing for federal bankruptcy, we were going to eliminate their petrol fund tax, which I think totals about $2 to $3 million a year. And at the same time, somebody, oh, well, then they shouldn't get the benefits from it, and they were fine with that. The trouble is every other, I mean, all gas tax revenue is being, it's a kick-on tax. It kicks on for 4, 5, 6 months a year. petrol fund fee, I mean, that is put on to clean up petrol spills. And Northwest has large storage tanks at the airport. They use a lot of fuel. If there's a massive spill, a multi-million-dollar spill, I just have the sense they're going to be coming in here pleading we can't afford to clean it up. And we're stuck with the mess then. Every other entity, the gas stations and everybody else, every local gas station that has tanks is paying into this. And this was not, as I say, it was not discussed in any committee, House or Senate, in 2003, I think it was. It was extended in 2005. It was meant to be, it was only done for 2 years. It was extended again. And again, as you can see from Section 15, it's not in effect right now. So they are paying the tax. They are qualified to receive the benefit. And this time, obviously, it's too late to avoid filing for, but resolving the federal bankruptcy proceedings. I just think it was never given any discussion, anything else, and every other petroleum user, every gas consumer is paying the fee for more months of the year because Northwest was exempted from it. And I just think as a matter of fairness, we ought to take it back out, leave it out of the bill and leave it the way the current law is where they're paying into it and they're benefiting from it.
I believe this petrol fund, it blinks on for about 4 months at a time, and
four
I believe
five.
It comes on in the fall. Does revenue know?
Well,
somebody know?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
You know, from my recollection, I think it has a trigger mechanism when it falls below a certain amount, then it kicks on. So it isn't a time of the year, but it's a level of dollars.
Mr. Chair, I'm Pat Finnegan from the Revenue Department. It is pretty much as Senator Marty has explained. The last time it clicked on in November through February. I think it's off right now, but it goes when they project the fund to go below $4 million, I think it were advised to trigger it. So it went on the last time in November of 2007 for 4 months.
So, and we don't expect it to probably go back on until next fall?
I think that's probably accurate, yes. It's usually once a year for 4 months.
Senator Larson, any thoughts?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, I typically would agree and not be a big fan of providing this, although my only reservation is given the complexity of the negotiations that are occurring as it relates to what the status of the airline will be in Minnesota, I'm a little concerned about making this change in policy now. And so I wonder if we might be better off addressing it at a later time rather than removing it from the bill now. You know, I'm very sympathetic to the, and given the fact that the airport's in my district, am concerned also about the potential for a spill. But I'm also, you know, trying to balance that with what conversations being had about jobs that are going to stay or not going to stay here. And I don't want to unnecessarily impact that without knowing what the impact of this of provisions like this would be if we mess with them. So that's my apprehension to removing the provision.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, no one spent more time reciting the number of accommodations, concessions, gifts, you name it, that we've done for Northwest Airlines in this state. And if you want the comprehensive recitation, I can give it.
I don't think that's necessary.
And this is just one on a long, long list. And I think it's important to call them out and to talk about them as we are observing what's going on with the negotiations. But I concur with Senator Larson that just yanking it away right now, you know, might upset kind of a delicate moment that we're in. And you know, I, as much as anyone, want to retain the headquarters, the jobs, et cetera. But I completely sympathize with Senator Marty. And, you know, I think we should have that list in front of us. People should understand it's not just the loan. It's many, many, many things we've done for Northwest Airlines that give them a huge leg up financially in this state.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, this is not taking away something they have right now. They lost it last year. With the veto, they lost it. They paid into it this past year. We are now in this bill. We are reinstating something that, again, was never discussed in any committee at any time in 2003. It was just slipped in there in a bill. It was not the tax conference committee. I was not on tax conference committee that year. I think it was economic development or something. And there was no discussion in any committee. And, again, they're paying the tax right now. I just think that we are giving them a new tax break if we put this provision in the bill.
Senators, go ahead.
Point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, members, if you look on line 90.27 and 90.28, you'll see that they only get this if their corporate headquarters are in Minnesota. And so very likely their corporate headquarters, from whatever, they're going to be moved to Atlanta, and they will lose this provision unless they leave their corporate headquarters here. So I don't know how that plays into it.
Would anybody like to testify on Senator Marty's proposal to delete Section 15 from Article 7?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Jeff Davidman. I'm representing Northwest Airlines. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this provision. Northwest Airlines obviously supports keeping it in the bill. A couple points to what Senator Marty referenced. The first piece was that that Northwest Airlines can access the purpose of the fund. And my understanding is you look through, although it's not in this bill, if you look through Section 115, there is a limitation on who can access the fund based on how many gallons that you store at the tank. And so we're talking about, I believe, the fuel farm at MSP, and we are in excess of the million gallons there. And so therefore, even though we pay into the fund, we're not able to access the program that the fund goes towards. Excuse me. The second piece is that there was actually an incident out at MSP a few years back that this type of fund program would specifically go to help clean up, and that was an example of a time when we couldn't access the fund, and so Northwest Airlines did clean that up as well, along with our counterparts at the airport did pay to clean that up. The third piece is that actually 2 years ago when we were looking at this the last time, Senator Pogemiller, who was then the tax chair, did pull this provision into the tax committee, and we did have a in-depth hearing where Northwest Airlines came in to testify in it as well, and that was at the time when we were able to get the two-year extension. So just a little bit more on the history of the program. Happy to answer other questions if they exist.
Senator, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, what do you think about this line 27-28 that with the corporate headquarters in Minnesota? Does that play any role in your testimony here today?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not able to really comment on what's going on those fronts. What I can say is that as I've seen the governor and other elected officials and the leaders discuss items that may look at the corporate headquarters as a piece, this obviously is only something that Northwest Airlines can access if their corporate headquarters remains in Minnesota. So I think your comment is an accurate comment.
I think the chair's thought is if Northwest Airlines is going to give up this provision, I guess I'd rather they gave it up on their own by moving the corporate headquarters than us taking it away from them, at this point in the merger discussions at least. And I would hope that they retain this provision years out into the future by the lines 2.7 and or 2.7 and 2.8, Senator Scoy. And I think Senator Dibble and Senator Larson make a good point. This is something they've had for a number of years, and maybe this isn't the time. There may be a time for us to look at it, but it might not be today. Senator Pogelmiller?
Chairman, I think perhaps at staff level we should ask if the airline did develop a plan approved by the Commissioner of Commerce. Did the Commissioner of Commerce approve something? Might just want to check and see if that happened. This is on lines 29 and 30.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Dibner.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogelmiller, we have both times that this provision has been extended. We have compiled a report and submitted it to the Commissioner of Commerce, and it has been approved. And I can get copies of past.
I don't think that's your burden. Okay. I think we should just at staff level ask the Commerce for the reports.
Yeah, sure.
Not your burden.
Okay. We'll do that. Senator Marty, anything further?
I can count the votes, but Mr. Chairman, I would like to have the amendment considered.
On the Marty motion on page 90 to delete section 15 in Article 7. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Senator Marty.
Chair.
Mr. Chair, just one more. Article 7, Section 2, page 83. This deals with, this is the other one I mentioned the other day, too. This deals with the ATV gas tax allocation. And as people may recall, we had, I have a handout to distribute. As people may recall, with the gas tax increase, the set aside that goes to recreational use will grow as well. And we allocate these based on a self-reporting by the recreational users of recreational equipment. And so in 2005, the legislature asked the DNR to do a study of how much ATV use there was, how much gas tax was consumed by it. And this handout has the cover page of the DNR study in February 2006. And it calculated, and based on the first half of their report, the only half they completed, it suggested we ought to increase the gas tax allocation to ATV trail development from 0.15% to 0.27% of all gas tax revenue, and which is almost doubling it. And when you factor in the gas tax increase, it would actually be like 2.5-fold increase that we're giving in a 2-3 year period to ATV trails. It would go from the actual in fiscal year 2007 was $795,000, and with the gas tax increase and the increase that's in this bill, will go from to $1.9 million, so less than $800,000 to over $1.9 million, which is close to 2.5% in 2.5-fold 250% increase. And the reason I say that this is a troubling provision, that was put in place because of this DNR gas tax study. If you look at page 2 of that handout I had under the goals and objectives, at paragraph A, it says there were two goals of the study. One was to estimate annual recreational gas consumption by ATVs, and two, to provide information to allocate gas consumption among ATV facility types, including public lands, trails, and forest roads, public road right-of-way, and private land trails and roads. If you read through this then, you can see my notes at the bottom. There were two goals of the study. There was a focus group on each of the two questions, on each goal. A question developed out of them. The survey was conducted on each of them. And the DNR tallied the first of the two survey results, but the second one they say they ran out of money for. So they had, I don't know, it was $70,000, $75,000 to do this. They did 99-plus percent of the work, but they didn't tally the second half of it. And what they found out from the first half of the study was that the average user, you look at the fourth page's hand, well, what page of the handout, the use of typical ATV user used about 30 gallons of gasoline annually for recreation purposes. Again, this is the user's analysis on their self-reporting, which may tend to be generous, but that's the way we calculate it. But the second question, not how much gas you use in your ATV, but where do you ride it? That's the second question they asked, where do you ride it? And they didn't tally the answers to that, which, again, I got the data from the department, asked an analyst who does this kind of thing to calculate what it would be. And he took the same survey results and calculated, you'll find the results on the back page. It says an analysis from the records contains that ATV riding, 72% for recreational riding was on private lands and trails, people riding on their own land or their friend's land, not public lands. The other roughly 30%, a little less than 30%, this is rounding, was on public road ditches, and 15% on public road ditches and 15% on public lands and trails. The 15% on public road ditches is actually doing harm to the roads, which means we should have that gas tax money in the gas tax in the Highway User Trust Fund. The 15% on public lands and trails is the money that if we want to do this, we should be allocating to trail development, because 15% of the ATV recreational riding that this gas is going to is on those trails. If you calculated that out, instead of increasing it to 0.27, you'd be cutting it down to more like, I think it was to 0.03, I think it was, percent, instead of 0.15, instead of about a tenth of what it, a sixth of what it would be now with the new increase. And I just think that because we just raised the gas tax, Senator Murphy, the MnDOT, everybody says it's not enough money to take care of the roads. To put an extra $1 million into trail riding for the 15% of riding that's done with that gas revenue is inappropriate, because if anything, it should stay in the public road funds to deal with the damage to the ditches. That's a lot of information, but I hope that it's clear that if the DNR had completed the study that we paid them to do, it would have come up, most people would come to the conclusion we should be cutting the amount of revenue, not increasing it. They are getting an increase anyway because we increased the gas tax, and they get the gas tax, including the 3% or whatever that we're kicking in for the debt service. All of that would go to trail development, but this bill, based on one half of a study, suggests we should double it again. And I'd make the case that this is absolutely inappropriate use of the gas tax revenue. Some people would argue constitutionally none of this should be taken out. And when if you fuel a lawnmower or any other generator, anything else with fuel, it stays in the highway trust fund because you're not using it on some other public lands where the money ought to go to that public purpose. But in this case, again, 85% of the ATV riding is not on public lands other than on the roads and ditches, which should stay with the highway fund. So I'd be happy to stand for questions, but rather than try and cut it, if this provision comes out of the bill, they are still getting a significant increase. They're still going to get an increase of about almost 50%. They're going from $795,000, they'd get another $276,000 per year under the gas tax increase. I'm not proposing to cut it. I'm just saying let's leave it at that increase rather than putting an extra million of our hard-fought highway funds into this one purpose.
Senator Scoy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, as I'm reading the information that you handed out here, I'd draw your attention to the center part on page 2, why it's important to know where the ATVs are ridden. And in kind of toward the middle of that first paragraph, it's talking about the theory behind the allocation of the gas tax. And the reason that this goes to the recreational fund as opposed to the road, because of the not being used on public roads. And it's so, therefore, it's private land or roads and trails, and that money can then go into developing a trail system so these places, people have a good place to ride. It's not being used on public roads, and this is, you know, good information that you presented us here, and it's pretty clear what the purpose is for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And I know there might be some small amount of riding. I see there's a small percentage here in public road ditches, but if they're able to get funds to develop a trail system, we can take the ATVs out of those ditches, and then you won't have to spend maintenance money there.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, 2 points. One, there is as much riding in the ditches, which does a lot of damage to the roads, as much riding in the ditches as there is on public lands and trails, on other public lands and on trails. 15% in the ditches, which does very great damage to the roads, and has to be repaired, and it tends to be townships and counties that are paying those bills. But that would put argument into why it should be used for highway and road purposes rather than putting into public lands and trails. And again, when you say it's not being used on the roads, that 72% that's riding on private lands, yeah, but when you fuel your generator, your lawnmower, that's not being used on public roads either, yet that goes, that stays in the highway fund. So I'd make the case that there is as much damage being done to public roads right now, and we're taking them as there is riding on public lands and trails, according to this study. And again, I'd argue the reason the DNR did 99% of the work and then they ran out of their money conveniently before they tallied the second half was they looked at the numbers. It was pretty much arguing we ought to cut DNR funding for trails. And DNR, it's not in their interest to do it, so they did 99% of the work and conveniently ran out of money.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Marty, I mean, we kind of disagree about what will happen if they get some resources into this account. I tend to think that it'll follow the what happened with the snowmobiles. Once they started to get some resources, we developed a real good trail system for snowmobiles in the state, and it's a pretty vibrant part of the economy in northern Minnesota. I think if you can get resources into this trail account to develop a good place for these people to ride, laws will be, enforced by the users themselves, as happened with the snowmobiles, and the traffic will move off of and out of the ditches and onto the trails. And so that's why I'm supportive of this provision.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being a good politician, I agree with both of my colleagues. without the increase in the gas tax, these ATV clubs are going to receive a windfall with this increase. Now they're going to receive a double windfall. And I'd be, I'm a little bit anxious about diverting resources out of the constitutionally dedicated gas tax, and there's a continuing debate and question about that. But leaving that aside for now, I'd be more sympathetic to Senator Scoy's point if we had been able to enact some of the reforms that were called for by the Legislative Auditor's Report a couple of years ago. We brought forward some common sense items that were beaten back, or worse, were enacted and then yanked away through a fairly questionable process a couple of years ago. So we've got clubs and a well-organized political force over here that resists some common sense reforms around accountability for these dollars, conflict of interest, enforcement, how we post trails, all of these items that make sense that people support, that would make sense for everyone, and we could find some reasonable ground so that we could all move forward in the spirit that Senator Scoy is discussing. Let's get some trails out there, make sure there's some standards for how these trails are built, the wetlands professionals who can come in and give the proper advice and make sure that these clubs aren't being governed by the very local officials who have the authority, who have the enforcement authority, those sorts of conflicts of interest. We don't have these goofy open, closed system that I don't even understand. And I've been around this issue for a long time. So, that's the frustration I want to articulate. So while we still have a really bad system and all of these problems have been called out quite dispassionately and really very credibly by the legislative auditor, we're going to heap more money into that kind of a system. That's the problem I have.
Maybe we can hear from the department.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Ron Potter. I'm with the Department of Natural Resources, Trails and Waterways. To the study, it was done as the legislature had requested in 2005 that we do a study to determine the amount of fuel used by ATVs. We completed that study, and it did indicate that it should go from 0.15, where it's at now, to 0.27 of 1%. I think Senator Marty had mentioned the fact that It appeared we did not finish the study dealing with public roads. What we found through the study was that most of the public that we had contacted, they were not sure when they were on a public road and when they were not. The confusion comes with township roads, our forest roads. Some feel those are public roads, those are not public roads. So we didn't have conclusive evidence to or information to reach that final conclusion. I think the other important thing to keep in mind here is that this is consistent with snowmobiles, motorboats. It's the same approach that we use for those to try to determine how much fuel they use off-road. The other important issue here is that this does not just go to trails. A lot of this money goes to enforcement. Enforcement's done not only on public land but private land. It's done all across the state, so it's imposed everywhere. Talking about the auditor's report, I believe we've followed through on almost all of those recommendations. Things have changed a lot since 2003. We're in the process of reclassifying all of our forests. We by the legislature, they said we needed to complete that at the end of this year. We're on track to complete that. Roughly about 50% of the routes in the forests are being closed. We're going through trail by trail, road by road, assessing if they can sustain use or not. Those that can are being designated as such. This money would help bring those routes up to our standards and provide places for these people to operate. Our approach to this is managed use on managed trails, and that's where the department's trying to head. This effort or this increase would certainly help us complete that effort.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, no one can reasonably defend this study. This is a half-baked study. It's a self-reporting survey, which by itself is not a scientific analysis. It's self-reporting. And then, you know, they only examined, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying we should put more, but we can't really stand on, this is not a good rationale for the change in policy. It's just not. It's a self-reporting survey. Only 1,000 or so people sent their cards back, and then they dropped the ball halfway through. I mean, we can have a debate about how much money to give to the ATVs and under what ATV clubs and under what conditions, and whether local authorities should be a part of the leadership of these clubs or not. But you know, I wish the DNR would stop defending this study. This is not by any rigor or any analysis a decent study at all.
Senator Dibble, I think what the department was saying is this is the same way that we've made calculations for boats and for snowmobiles. Mr. Potter, how many ATVs are there in the state now compared to when the study previous to this one was done? Because, Senator Dibble, I think that is where you make a stronger argument is there, frankly, has been a proliferation of the number of these vehicles, and obviously they're burning more fuel. But Mr. Potter, do you have those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, members, when the previous study was done in 1984, we had 19,159 ATVs registered. When the study was completed in 2005, there was 235,000 registered ATVs, and actually current registration number is about 263,000.
So, Senator Dibble, I think that's kind of the point, is the previous study had 19,000 vehicles. The current one had 235. I think somebody's burning more fuel. I mean, so to the scientific part, I think that part at least is hard to argue. But do they use 30 gallons? So who knows?
Yeah, but we're all, I mean, there's a whole lot more. I mean, it's a percentage of the total, and there's a lot more fuel being burned by everyone. But, I mean, and that's fine. I mean, it's just... You know, to stand on this as the rationale is a little hard to swallow. I mean, we can have debates about lots of other stuff, and we can even move it up and have a good debate there for whatever reason. We need more trails, like Senator Escoy argues, and I agree with that. But it's just, you know, when DNR does not do themselves credit when they stand on this particular study, because it's, you know, any amateur analysis by an undergrad could say this just does not stand up.
Senator Polkemiller.
Mr. Chairman, do we know the amount of money involved here, 0.15 to 0.27?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Von Mock? It's like $600,000, I think.
It's about. Is that right, Josh? Mr. Chairman, it was the actual in 2007 was $795,000.
with the gas tax increase, and the next 3 years, it would be, with the most, in 2010, it would be $1.06 million. With the tax increase, with the shift in this bill, go from just over $1 million to $1.9 million, so about $900,000 more. And
then I was just going to say, Senator Dibble, whether the study's good or not, isn't the bottom line, is it a good idea to put $900,000 more into trails or not?
That's the question.
Okay, and I just have a hard time. I'm guessing we probably don't put enough into trails now there. And so I guess my only issue would be is, are the finance committees involved in this, kind of aware of this, and is this okay with them? Or if it is, and I just don't know if Senator Anderson, I think this would be her committee, wait, and Murphy.
Wait, if I was going to make a guess, Mr. Chairman, they'd love to have the money to spend out of that dedicated account. But Ms. Van Mosch, how much money are we talking about? 600 and...
Mr. Chair, members, it's on... basically, it's $370,000 in FY09, $810,000 in FY10, and $820,000 in FY11 on lines 69 and 70 of the spreadsheet. And I have shared this information with... we do have a more detailed revenue estimate if you'd like to see a copy of that. And this... at least the fiscal analysts for the related committees have seen this information.
Mr. Bowen, would you like to say something before we try to move on?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd just like to tell a story from last year. You know, we did increase our fees because we were frankly running out of money, and we needed money for more trail development. And then in addition to that, there was a call for more enforcement. So the users, those clubs, Senator Dibble, you talked about, did in fact agree to that increase, and it was about a 33% increase in our fee. And for that, we put about $500,000 of that dollars of that into trails, grant and aid trails. But we put about another $500,000 in enforcement for the DNR. And then I also asked that we put $100,000 more in our sheriff's grant program so that we're equal to what the snowmobiles do. Right now, the snowmobiles give about $300,000 a year for grants to local sheriff's departments that need this additional help. Now we're on par with them on that. And then we also started this ambassadors program where in fact, the clubs are going to take the initiative and are going to be trained by DNR enforcement, and we're not enforcement people or enforcement officers, but to go out and to monitor our trails so that the trails we are spending a lot of money on are sustainable and in fact the people that are out there causing problems are turned in or told to stop. So I think the overall, you know, we have a commitment to not only our trails, but also to proper enforcement, and I think we've shown that by the amount of money. We spend virtually as much money in our budget for enforcement as we do for trail development. So I think that kind of is the bottom line and shows our commitment. And that enforcement, as Representative Potter indicated, is not done just on public lands. It's done on roads. If there's a young kid riding an ATV on a road, there's hopefully a deputy sheriff or a CO there ticketing them. And one of the things we've really encouraged, especially with the kids, because the kids when they're out on the road, it's dangerous, obviously. And we have actually been encouraging our enforcement officers and the sheriffs to take those machines home and to have, if not a good talk with the parents, to actually give them a violation, a ticket for that, because those kids should not be out on the roads. So we are a very strong proponent of enforcement. We're a strong proponent of getting trails. We believe that, you know, we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this trail, the trail system. And as you heard Mr. Potter say, we're actually going to lose about half the trails that we have out there right now. But those trails are all unmanaged. So what we're trying to do is go to a managed trail system. And without these kind of funds, and these studies were done the same way the snowmobile studies are done, the same way the boat studies are done. So we think it was a good study, and we certainly stand by it.
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I want to agree with Senator Dibble and Senator Marty on this. I think there's a lot of concern as it relates to leakage out of funds for highways. And while I do support more money for trails and enforcement, we get that with the increase in the gas tax. And I don't have this. I have about the same amount of trust in the study as Senator Dibble does. And so, that's a pretty big concern because we're almost doubling the percentage. So.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I want to make a couple points. One, Mr. Potter's explanation or excuse that, well, we don't know when they're riding on public land or private land. Again, it's all self-reporting, which I would argue is more generous to this purpose. But the reason we were told by the department 2 years ago was they ran out of money. And they did a lot of work on this thing. They've created, in preparing the survey, two focus groups were conducted. One focus group were devoted to each of the two goals. They asked two questions. They sent it out to every person and every rider they could reach. They sent it out to them. They tallied one of them. And the other one, well, we ran out of money, which was the phoniest excuse in the world. Now they're saying it wasn't running out of money. Now he's saying that it's because, well, we didn't know whether we could trust whether they knew. They were confused about whether they were riding on public or private land. And the whole point is less than one-sixth of the riding is done on public lands and trails. An equal one-sixth is done on roadside ditches, which is a lot of private landowners, their driveways and stuff, they got to repair the damage themselves because the ATV Association fought the damage account so long. I don't know if we still have it even. And so we're one-sixth of the riding that we're taking all this gas tax, this extra almost, well, $800,000 for per year. That's for one-sixth of the ATV riders riding on public lands. And I think we should put money into them, but I think that should be done out of the registration fees. And I voted for this gas tax increase. It was difficult to want to raise taxes on people, but it was going to roads and transit. And here, just based on a fraudulent study, I'll call it fraudulent, we're putting an extra $800,000 a year from that gas tax revenue that we all voted on, taking it away from the roads and transit and stuff that we thought we were wanting to do with that bill and putting it into recreational uses for one-sixth of the ATV riders. And I just think that's the wrong thing to do.
On the Marty motion, page 83, Article 7, delete Section 2. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Oh.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment's not adopted. Any other amendments, members?
Let's see, 83.
Senator Larson moves that House File 3201, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Any other discussion, members? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Sharon.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I apologize for being late to the meeting. I would like you to know that I have with me the city manager from Mankato, Pat Henches, and he got caught in some very tough weather, and it delayed his arrival. And then in addition, in this slippery snow, he slipped and fell. So my first inquiry was whether or not that was on state property, I want you to know. And it wasn't. I'm in front of you this morning with Senate File 3009. And this is a bill that will be amending a 1991 authorization that allowed the city of Mankato to impose a half-cent sales tax for the purposes of making riverfront development improvements, which included a civic center and arena that housed and partnered with Minnesota State University's Division I hockey program. What this bill does is change it in a number of ways. What we're asking for is an extension of the sales tax from 2015 to 2025, and This extension would allow for a match to a future state bonding request to improve the arena, to include a women's hockey sheet of ice for women's hockey, Division I hockey, and an arts theater. So it is an extension to 2025 of the sales tax for capital construction and capital improvements. In addition, the bill asks for a new source of revenue on page 2, section 3. It asks for the inclusion of a food and beverage tax and entertainment tax and describes the use of the proceeds from these taxes. Instead of using sales tax in the future, if this should be approved, for operating the Mankato Civic Center and Arena that's now called the Altel Center, we would shift the operations authority to the food and beverage tax and off of the local option sales tax. So those are the critical components of this. The food and beverage and entertainment tax would be used for operations and also paying off an additional debt services, and the extension of the sales tax to 2025 for the purposes of capital improvements of a women's hockey and arts. And I have with me, as I already indicated, our city manager from Mankato, Pat Henches, who can speak more specifically to the proposal and answer your questions.
Mr. Henches, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize that there's a fair amount of angst over the local option sales tax, maybe perhaps more in the House than this body in the Senate. But I think it's important to note that Mankato, being, I think, the third community having local option sales tax, has used this in I think, for its original intent. We have a great partnership with the state of Minnesota, MinSCU, and Minnesota State on our facility. And it, I think, is made a lot of sense. This facility was never built with essentially state bonding money, such as some of the other facilities have had in the past and are asking for in the future. So we've had a great partnership. It has been something that I think has been beneficial, again, to the state, the region, and our local community. And we certainly understand some of the issues with subsidizing the operating authority with local option sales tax and accordingly have put forth entertainment and hospitality and food tax accordingly. I would also note that our authority does provide us some capital authority under the current sales tax bill till 2015. That is sufficient enough to deal with the first phase of this project request that is in, I guess will be hopefully in the conference committee and Senator Langseff's efforts. So we are in the Senate side of the bonding bill, and we do have authority going into that phase. So I want to rest assured that our position as far as matching the state authority is still in place. But certainly as we move out in the future, we see the value of extending that sales tax to make our facility competitive with the other facilities throughout the state that have used it or are using essentially state bonding money to build their convention centers, their civic centers, and their arenas.
Mr. Henches, I'm wondering, the authority we're giving you on the food and beverage and on the entertainment tax says it's a very firm 1%, and this is for operations. I'm wondering if it, to give the city a little more flexibility, what would you think if we changed the 1% and said up to 1%, so that at some point in the future, you know, you may have some reason. Duluth, for example, for the new deck, I believe, is going at 0.75% for that. It would just give the city a little bit more flexibility going down the road.
We just, Mr. Chair, we just had that discussion, partly because perhaps that we may choose not to levy the 0.5% we currently levy as part of the local option sales tax on that group of industries or businesses and accordingly use the current 0.5%. So, yes, we would support and not see that as problematic.
I think it gives you a little more flexibility. Senator Marty? Senator Marty moves on lines 2.2 after the word tax. I better have counsel do this. Counsel?
Mr. Chair, on page 2, line 20, after of, insert the words up to. And then on line 26, after the word of, insert up to.
Senator Sharon, are you supportive of that?
I support this amendment.
On the Marty oral amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Questions from the committee? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hentges, or Senator Sharon, because it's Mankato coming in for Mankato sales tax, the North Mankato disputes, was North Mankato ever in this tax? And is there, I presume they're not opposing not having it applied to them, but have they ever been in tax like this?
The original bill in 1991 that sought this permission, we invited North Mankato to participate in this, and at that time they did not want to participate in the sales tax. So the referendum that passed in approval of this related only to the community of Mankato. And you know, as is true in all these matters, we really saw this as something that we would do at a local level. It was a great partnership with Minnesota State University to not have a duplication of facilities between the city. We really are engaged in intergovernmental cooperation in the rural part of the state. So this was our way of being able to accomplish this at that time. So that's the unique character of this, is that it was developed without bonding money. This time, for the future development, we will be looking for a match, a dollar-for-dollar match for bonding money for the capital improvements.
Other questions, members? Chair lays over Senate File 3009 for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. Mr. Hentges, thank you for coming in, and we will be in contact if we have any other questions. Thank you. Senator Latz here?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Thank you
very much. Senator Latz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Like so many, I faced a bad commute this morning. Apologize for my tardiness. I was the last of this of my group to arrive. I picked the wrong shortcut.
Me too.
But I saw some nice parts of the city along the way.
Senator District 60.
Senator Dibble, how did you do this morning on the commute?
Oh, I thought I was being clever, and I got myself hung up. I needed a train to get over here.
Senator Johnson, do you need a train, too?
No, I was fine on Rice Street.
Senator Marty, did it go okay?
Most of the way, 35E was kind of stop and go.
Senator Latz, go ahead. Members, we have in front of us Senate File 3176.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I have with me Cheryl Iwakim, a Hopkins City Council member, Rick Getcho, the Hopkins City Manager, and Robert Dyke, the City Attorney for Hopkins. And they will explain a little more in detail what we're dealing with here. But let me just give you a quick summary. There was a time a few years ago when Hopkins came in requesting an extension of their TIF district, had some unique situations in their city which justified the extension. One thing they did not request, but which was included in the extension, was an additional restriction on the use of the proceeds from the TIF district, which was different than what is in the ordinary TIF law. And so today the request is that that additional restriction be removed so that they can use the TIF proceeds in the way that just about everyone else can use their TIF proceeds when they have a TIF district. For the details, I will turn it over to the city manager, Rick Getcho.
Thank you, Chair. At the time that
please give your name for the record.
I'm sorry, Rick Getcho, city manager, City of Hopkins. At the time that the that our initial legislation was drafted and coming through, I was actually city manager in Senator Marty's district. So I'm going to turn things over to the city attorney to provide a little bit of an overview.
Yeah, my name's Bob Dyke, and I act as counsel to the city and have for quite a while. In fact, the reason I'm here is because I'm about the only one who was left from those days. So I can give you we prepared a memo, and I can give you a brief summary of what we're asking for. This district was created in 1999. It's a redevelopment tax increment district intended to help undertake some redevelopment activities within the city, one of which was the redevelopment of the old Super Value, what's referred to as the North Annex building. And there were some other activities that occurred, but that was a primary focus. That's located at the intersection of 169 and Excelsior Boulevard. In 2001 and 2002, the city negotiated with Medica to do a development agreement under which Medica would build a headquarters on that site. They would acquire the property from Super Value, demolish it, and build a new building. Unfortunately, the Medica had some business issues at that time, some of which were prompted by Attorney General Hatch's look into their business operations. And they were, after we signed a development agreement with them, they informed us that they could not expand at that time. And so we were kind of back to the drawing board. So the city came to the legislature and asked for some additional time for the district to be extended for an additional, I think we asked for 5 years, and the legislature agreed to 4, and also for additional time to spend money. There's a 5-year rule in the tax increment law that kind of limits how long you can spend money to 5 years. You still have some ability after that, but it's the primary limitation. The legislature agreed and allowed us to extend the district and to have additional time to spend the money, but also put a provision in that said, from the date that you accept this, you can no longer spend any money outside of the district. And the city did accept it, believing we needed to do that, and really didn't, at that time think of that there would be a reason to be spending money outside the district. But that provision is different than how the law works. I mean, typically you have the ability to spend some percentage, depending on the type of district, outside of the tax increment district, as long as you comply with other rules that, limit what you can spend. I mean, you have to spend it on qualified activities. In the case of a district like this, 90% of the district has to be, or the tax increment has to be spent on eliminating blight and the conditions that allowed you to create the district. So what we're here asking for is to eliminate that provision in the special law that restricts the ability to spend any money at all outside of the district, and would like the if that does get eliminated, we would be able to spend some up to 25% on tax increment eligible activities outside, and we have activities that we are, or the city has activities that they're looking at right now that are they've been trying for a number of years to redevelop the downtown area, and recently the focus has been on trying to redevelop older buildings into housing. And that's becoming harder and harder in this day and age, given the housing market and the credit market. And we're basically looking for some funds to help in those activities. With that, I'll see if Rick has anything.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that we have a lot of redevelopment in our community, and the downtown is very important. We've had a lot of success with mixed-use redevelopment, and with the housing crisis and what's happened recently, the more redevelopment dollars we can put toward those efforts, the better. And also, I think, as Bob mentioned, we just want to be on the same playing field as almost every other city has to be with their TIF districts. We're not asking for anything above and beyond what you would normally see related to a TIF district.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you so much for hearing this bill tonight. Hopkins is a really unique town. We're only 2 by 2 miles and have 18,000 people there, and we have a lot of need for housing. It's a very transitional town as well. And our developments on Main Street are very important to us, and we've been in the process of redeveloping them for close to 4 years. And having the ability and having the tools and the flexibility that other cities have to help with redevelopment will make a big difference to us. Because inner ring suburbs, we don't have a lot of chance for development unless it's redevelopment. So please consider this today, and we'll take questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add a
thought. You know, I served 10 years on the St. Louis Park City Council, and I know how important TIF is. For a fully developed inner-ring suburb, it's basically the only tool in the toolbox. We can't compete with the greenfields that are in the outer-ring suburbs. They don't have the same kind of costs that fully developed older cities or towns have. And that's what we're facing, much higher costs to redevelop. And a failure to redevelop doesn't simply leave a greenfield green. It leaves a developed property falling apart or turning into blight. Or if it's already blight, then it's a danger as well as an eyesore. So TIF really is the only tool. And Hopkins has done a terrific job of using that tool judiciously. And this the restriction that's currently on here, it really would be a burden on the city to try to continue their redevelopment efforts.
Senator Lotz, I'm going to request that you and the representatives from the city work with council, and let's try and narrow up the parameters some of what the money's going to be spent on and maybe what percentage of the money could be used outside of the district. I think this is going to be a tough pull with the House, I think, unless we kind of set some parameters of how much of the increment's going to be used and maybe I'll create some permissible uses. Does that seem like that's something the city could work towards?
Chair, I do think that's something we can work toward. We do have specific projects in mind that we can delineate, and I think the up to 25% is what's in the law, and quite frankly, I don't even know if that amount of money is even available outside of the district based on the use of funds within the district. So I think that is something we can definitely work with Senate Council on.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and I apologize if this question has already been answered and I was reading or not otherwise paying attention. Has the Super Value site been redeveloped, or I was just reading through the memo. Is there an increment available to use?
Senator Dibble, it is being redeveloped. This is a site of a Cargill office campus being developed by Opus, with one building currently under construction, a second office building to begin at the intersection of 169 Excelsior Boulevard, and there will be some increment potentially available.
Thank you.
It actually is a three-building campus, and all office use in Cargill. It's their second world headquarters, so pretty excited about the project.
Great. Thanks.
Other questions, members? Thank you, Senator Lotz. Chair lays over Senate File 3176 for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Members, unless something goes wrong, our hope is to have House File 3201 on the floor tomorrow. There is some urgency in that the federal conformity is contained in there, and the department has told us that that really needs to be on the governor's desk the first week of the month. You know, every week more people file their 2007 returns. This would give, if we can get it on the governor's desk and get it signed, sooner is better than later, because every day more people are filing and having to add back federal deductions when they calculate their Minnesota income tax liabilities. So we're going to make a run at trying to do it tomorrow on the floor, and I've talked with Senator Sengem. I asked him if he'd like me to provide an opportunity, Senator Johnson, to come to the Republican caucus, if they'd like me to kind of walk through with them what's in the bill so that we don't spend all day trying to figure out what's in there on the floor tomorrow, because we have committees going through some important work with the committee deadlines coming shortly. So what are we doing next? I believe Senator Skoy, the division is meeting tomorrow.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Property Tax Division tomorrow. We have a couple of bills, and I think we're going to talk about the LGA change that the cities have been working on and see if we can make some progress with that area.
And the full committee will meet again on Tuesday, 8:30. Thank you, members. Committee adjourned.